All right. That being said, tonight we want to continue in our study in the book of Ruth. Now, we had a week off last week because of the revival, and because of that, it seems to me like it's been forever since we've talked about Ruth. It just seems like forever to me. So, tonight, I want to remind you that as we look into Ruth, Ruth is the only book in the Bible that is named after a Gentile woman. The purpose of this book primarily is to show the lineage of David in the Old Testament, but it also gives us the lineage, therefore, of Christ, because as we know, the prophets of past said that the lineage of Christ, the Messiah, would come through the lineage of David. Now, this book is also important to us because it explains the role of a kinsman redeemer. It enlightens us to that. Had we not had this book, it would be very hard for us to understand the customs of that day as far as the kinsman redeemer. We'd only have a little bit of Deuteronomy, and we wouldn't understand it very well. So this is a good book in completing our understanding of this. Now, so far, what have we had? We've had a man by the name of Elimelech, and Elimelech took his family because of famine, and he moved out of Bethlehem, meaning house of bread, and he moved to Moab with his wife and probably his two sons. And we see after some time there in the land, seemingly a short time in the land, Elimelech died. Now, his two sons, they enjoyed being in Moab. Evidently, they took wives in Moab. They had every desire to stay there. Their names were Mahlon and Chilion, you might remember. But the boys also died. The boys also died there. Now, since her husband had died, since her boys had died, Naomi desired to go back home. Go back to Bethlehem, where there was people that she knew, and a place where she might be more familiar with how to survive, being now that she had no man in her life. Now, as we said, she desired to go back home to Bethlehem. She asked her stepdaughter, she asked her daughters-in-law to go back to their families, go back to their kindred, go back and marry, be well. And we see, of course, that Orpha left, but Ruth abided with Naomi. She went down there. Now, last week, or the last session, I should say, that we had together, we saw the industriousness of Ruth. We saw how she went into the fields to glean. No one had to ask her to go out and provide for the family. She desired to do that. And she went out there, and the Bible says it was her hap, but we know that it was the providence of God that she ended up there in the field of Boaz. And it wasn't very long before Boaz, this prosperous older man, a kinsman of her family, that Ruth caught his eye. And we saw the favor that Boaz placed upon her as she went out into the fields. He gave her special privileges, if you'll recall. He said, and we see the amount of desire, really, that he had upon Ruth right away. He said, don't glean over there with the men. You glean over there with the women, and you stay close to them, desiring that she stay close to them. He told the women also that as they go through and as they're working, to drop extra for her so that she might be able to glean along the way. And that just wasn't one day. That was day after day, because the first time Boaz saw her, he said, I want you to come in my fields the rest of the harvest. Don't go to anybody else's fields. She might see somebody else over there. But don't go in anybody else's fields. Stay in my field. So she continued there to the end of the harvest season, which was probably about, well, she was offered to stay there for about 3 months of time. That's how long the harvest season typically was. Now, Naomi, of course, who saw the favor of Boaz that was placed upon her, was quick to tell Ruth, indeed, don't go into anybody else's field. Don't let anybody see you in anybody else's field. And you do stick close to those women. Don't be around the men. Why? Naomi understood. Boaz had feelings. Boaz had feelings for Ruth, and he had shown her great favor. And she immediately, upon hearing of Boaz, remembered, in fact, that he was and could be a kinsman redeemer. A kinsman redeemer. What is a kinsman redeemer? Again, well, the Hebrew word there, again, is goel, and it means redeemer. A kinsman redeemer had the right to avenge the blood of the slain, had the right to redeem houses and possessions if they were sold or mortgaged. They had the right to redeem persons by marrying them in the death of one, a death of a brother, or if there was no brothers left, then it would be the death of a relative. Now, I want you to understand something. Ruth was not bound to marry a kinsman redeemer. She was not bound to do that just because her husband had died. When her husband died, she could have left Naomi. She could have left Naomi. She could have went back to her own father's house and married again. She could have married a Moabite over there. And there would have been nothing wrong with that. As a matter of fact, when she came into Bethlehem, if there would have been anybody that had any favor on her, they could have asked her to marry them. And she could have done so. As a matter of fact, I told you that the likelihood of that would have been rare because she was a Moabite and living in Bethlehem inside of Israel. That wouldn't have happened as much. But you know what? There was probably some Moabites who even lived down in Bethlehem, as we see how these people traveled. And Moab wasn't that far away from Bethlehem. But if she wanted to preserve the name of her husband Mahlon and raise up a child in his name, she had to marry a kinsman. So in doing this, it wasn't just about her and having a child. She was doing it out of respect for her former husband. Now, we know that when Mahlon died, that Chilion had died, there was no way that he could perform that. And Naomi was too old to have any more children. So the nearest kinsman in the family would have the chance to do it. And we don't, in this story, we're not sure how the relationships work. It doesn't tell us that. But they could, if asked, they had the chance to do that. But you know what? If she could have went to the nearest kinsman and asked to be redeemed, he could say no. He has that choice. He had a choice. Now, there was repercussions for making that choice of no. I mean, he had shame placed upon him for doing so, but he could always say no. There was always a choice. Always a choice. I want you to understand that. Let's look in verse 1 of chapter 3. Rattled enough. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee?" Now, as we read this verse, we understand that some time has passed by. Now, it's easy when we're reading the Word of God, often when we read from chapter to chapter, and we read it so quickly through that we think things happen day right after day. But no, oftentimes chapters are separated by several weeks, months, sometimes even verses in a chapter separated by years of time. But now we understand some time has passed by here. It could have been just a few weeks, and it could be actually after the whole harvest. So it could be after a couple of months, if not 3 months of time has passed by. Now, undoubtedly, as we read between the lines here, what has happened? Ruth has continued to go into the fields, and Boaz has continued to show great favor towards Ruth, probably giving her special treatment along the way, probably going out and having daily conversations with her. You almost have to wonder, and I suspect so, that Naomi, being part of the family there through the marriage of Elimelech, that perhaps that Naomi had Boaz come over and eat with them sometime. You could imagine, you ladies could imagine doing that sometime. I'm sure you could. But here in verse 1, Naomi says to Ruth, "Shall I not seek rest for thee?" Now, what was she talking about? What was she talking about here? She wasn't talking about a bench for her to sit on. She wasn't talking about a nice couch or anything like that, or a bed to take a nap in. That's not the kind of rest that she's speaking of here. She is speaking about marriage, about marriage. Now, over the past couple of months, what has Ruth been doing? She's been going out into the fields, and she's been gleaning, she's been grinding, she's been working like a man, out in the fields, doing all of these things. Naomi desires for her to marry. That's always been Naomi's desire, hasn't it? Even chapter 1, we saw Naomi's desire was for Ruth to have a family of her own, to have children of her own. That was every woman's desire at that time. But She desired her to have a home, to have a family. That's the rest that she speaks of Ruth entering into. Now, we know that marriage is work. We know that marriage is work between two people, but a good marriage is also a haven of rest. It is a haven of rest. Now, Naomi is just getting warmed up here at her suggestion. She's just getting warmed up towards Ruth here. You know, she's watched Boaz. She's seen the favor that Boaz has showed to Ruth, and she's seen Ruth and how much that she adores Boaz. And I suspect that when Ruth came home after being out in the fields working, that all she did was talk about what Boaz did today. That's kind of what I expect that she probably did. But now Naomi is going to push this issue even further. Look in verse 2. "And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast? Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor." Now, Naomi knows Boaz is a kindred. She believes he's the next of kin. She doesn't realize that there's somebody closer. But now, at this point in time, the crops have been taken in. They've all been taken in. And this happens later after the crops have gathered in, that they start to bring the crops to the threshing floor. And what they would have done at this time is they would have taken the barley, and when they say they winnoweth the corn or winnoweth the barley or whatever it is, they would take like a pitchfork-like structure and they would throw it up in the air real high, and the wind would separate what's called the chaff from the grain because it was heavier, so it would fall to the ground. Now, in this part of the world, evidently, the wind blows harder in the evening and night than it does in the day. So that's why he would be threshing, or he would be on the threshing floor in the evening time. As a matter of fact, when you go through the Bible and you see threshing, it almost is always occurring there in the evening time. So that's what time she tells her to go out. So now the servants would have been the one out there doing most of the threshing, let's face it. But Boaz was there, and whenever they did this, he would have provided food and drink for them. That would have been a little banquet he would have given every night that they were to do these things. Now, it was customary that after the grain was separated, that they would make a heap of the grain there. And you did not leave your grain. Why? Because if you did, someone could come steal it in the middle of the night. So typically, someone stayed with it. And from what I understand, it was very common for the owner of the field to actually sleep there with the grain itself. And there was probably some servants around as well. Now, Naomi knows this. She knows that they'll be out on the threshing floor that night. She knows that Boaz will be staying there with his grain. He'll be away from the city, away from his home, and he will be alone for the most part. As a matter of fact, we really can't tell that there was anybody else around. But, and we see that it is Naomi's desire here for Ruth to approach Boaz about carrying out the part of a redeemer. She wants him to go, she wants Ruth to go out and ask him to be the kinsman redeemer, but she doesn't want to do it in such a way that anyone else will know. She desires that it be done in private. Why? Because Boaz had shown them a lot of favor already. And there was a certain shame if a person did not accept this offer. She wants it to be done in private where no one else will know. So if he does decline, there won't be any shame put upon Boaz. That's one of the reasons that all this is going on. Look in verse 3. It says, "Wash thyself therefore and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor, but make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking." So she tells Ruth, Naomi tells Ruth, to do exactly the things that you would normally do, ladies, when you go on a date, right? This is what you would normally do. You clean yourself up. You take a bath. You put on some nice perfume. You put on your best clothes. You get out of the widow's garments. You get out of the garments that you would go to the fields in. In essence, you're going to look your best. look your best. That's the desire here. Now, she tells Ruth to, when she goes down, don't go to him while they're still eating, while they're still drinking, but to wait until all that is over, till people are gone, and then when you can go to Boaz alone, go to him. And this is what I want you to do. Look in verse 4. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie. And thou shalt go in and uncover his feet, and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. Now, you have to admit, this seems like strange advice, doesn't it? Seems like strange advice. But I want you to understand, remember this so far, that we have seen nothing but goodness in the character of Naomi. We have seen nothing but goodness in the character of Ruth. And we have seen nothing but goodness in the character of Boaz. Yet when we read this verse, and as so many often have done as they read this verse, they think that some ill advice was given here by Naomi, advice that may lead to a sinful situation. But that's not what's going on. This is not evil advice. Naomi did not tell Ruth to put on the clothes of a harlot, did she? No, she did not. She did. That's what, remember Tamar? That's what Tamar did with Judah. She put on the clothes of a harlot. But she told her to look her best. Now, I want you to understand this. Naomi believes that Boaz is the next of kin. Now, according to the book of Deuteronomy, and we won't read this tonight, but we'll be reading it next week. In the book of Deuteronomy, the laws for being a next of kinsman, if the brother died or the relative died, and the woman approached and asked to be a kinsman redeemer, that's all there was to it. They were husband and wife. There was no nuptials. There was no wedding party. There was none of that. It was an automatic thing. Now, you can, we can't assume here that Naomi told Ruth to go there and try to consummate a marriage or a relationship with Boaz, because look what she tells him. She tells him that he will tell her what must be done. Now, Ruth, again, was just to present herself secretly to Boaz to see if he would fulfill that part of her redeemer. Look in verses 5 and 6. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do. And she went down unto the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. Now, I have to believe, anyway, that this would have taken incredible nerve on the part of Ruth to go and do this. You know, I can remember when in school we had to do the square dancing thing. And they'd line all the girls up on one side and they'd line all the boys up on the other side. And certain days the boys had to choose the girls and certain days the girls had to choose the boys. The boys were always quick to choose the girls, but the girls, they were always a whole lot slower on their days. You know, it's more natural for a man to approach a woman, isn't it? It's less natural for a woman to approach a man. So this would have taken incredible nerve, I believe, on the part of Ruth to go and do this. But she has already shown she loves Boaz. She's already shown that. And Boaz has already shown that as well, that he loves her and the favor that he's shown to her. And we see, as always, Ruth has always done exactly what Naomi would say for her to do. Now, verse 7. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn, and she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. Now the meal was over, the guests are gone. Some men may have been around somewhere close and slept and stayed the night. But, and as we read this too, I want you to understand when it says that he had eaten and drunk, that doesn't mean that he was drunk. It just means that they had eaten and they had had things to drink along with it. It doesn't mean that he was drunk at all. I want you to understand that as well. But he laid down on this heap, probably as he had many nights before. Now, guaranteed though, there had never been a night like this before in his life. Never had anything like this happened in the past. Once he was fast asleep, Ruth came in. She went in, she uncovered his feet. She didn't lie beside him. She didn't come to him in the middle of the night and start passionately kissing him. She laid at his feet. And what do you think that symbolized? Well, some of y'all have animals. A lot of you have animals. I know Sister Reva has a dog. And several people have dogs and cats. And when you go to bed at night, some of these animals, they often sleep with us. Where do they typically sleep? Right down at your feet. Even when you sit down in a chair and they come over and they plop down at your feet and they lay down. That's often what they do. Why do they do that? Because they're dependent upon you. They have a love that comes out of the dependence that they have upon you. You are their master. That's the same way that Ruth is coming to Boaz. She comes to him softly. She disturbs him not. And she lays down. Do you think she slept a wink? No. I'm sure she didn't sleep a wink that night. I know I wouldn't have. Verse number 8. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid. And he turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. So around midnight sometime, Boaz became aware that something was at his feet. He didn't know what it was. And you can imagine he probably jumped. He was probably very startled at the fact of not knowing what was there. It was dark outside, obviously. Now, the only thing that he first understands is that there's a woman laying at his feet. And he doesn't even know who it is at this point in time. So he asked, verse 9. He said, "Who art thou?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." Again, understand, nothing unseemly is taking place here. A man wore an outer garment. That outer garment was a tallit. It was called a tallit. Now, at one time, I'd preached a message about the tallit. I brought a tallit in here and showed you. Today's modern tallit is like a shawl. And it had the four corners on it with the tassels on it, if you'll recall that. Now, at this point in time, typically, whenever they wore the tallit, it wasn't a shawl. It was a whole outer garment, and it would go down quite far. That's when she pulled it back over his feet. That's the tallit. That was that long outer garment. And as we said, it had those fringes, those little corners on that garment were called the wings of the garment. That's the Hebrew word for it. That's when it says skirt here, that's what it's speaking of. It is speaking of the wings of the garment. So when she's when she talks about taking her that garment and spreading it over her, she's saying, "Take the wings of your garment and spread it over me." Those tassels, those fringes, again, were what? They were a reminder of the commandments of the law. And this indeed is part of the law, the fulfilling of the kinsman redeemer. Now, in the last chapter, Boaz had spoke of Ruth, and he said how spoke of how she had come under the wings of God, the wings of Jehovah, under God's protection, and truly she had been. But you know what? God, in providing protection for people, often uses the means of another to do it. And he had used Boaz in that capacity from the very beginning. And now Ruth approaches him, and she asks Boaz to formally take her under his wings. Verse number 10. And he said, "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, inasmuch as thou followedest not young men, whether poor or rich." You know, the first 20 times or more that I read this verse, you know what? My mind kept inserting two words in there. And that's, I kept thinking to myself, it says, "For thou hast showed more kindness to me." But that's not what it says. It doesn't say to me. And, you know, I all along I thought Boaz was speaking of the kindness that she showed to him by coming to him instead of going after someone else. But the key phrase actually is "in the latter end than in the beginning." That's the key phrase here. You see, Ruth is coming to seek Boaz, not as just a husband. She's coming to seek him as a kinsman redeemer. She wants to raise up a child in the memory of her husband Mahlon, so that his seed not perish. Ruth, again, after her husband died, she could have went out and married someone young. She could have had a husband. She could have raised a family of her own. She could have married someone that she could grow old with. She could have technically went to Boaz and asked him about being a wife. But she didn't do that. She approached him to be a redeemer. To be a redeemer. So she showed more respect, more kindness to Mahlon, her dead husband, in the end, than she ever could in her life, because she was going to raise up a child in his name. Verse number 11. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all of the city of my people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. You know, Boaz quickly, of course, agrees here to do what Ruth is asking him to do. He didn't have to think twice about it. Why? Because he wasn't just a good man. It's because he had love for her already. God had already provided that in his heart. Now, I want you to notice again his comment about her being a virtuous woman. And everyone that knew her knew that she was a virtuous woman. Again, that should put to rest to anyone who believes that the motives here of Ruth coming in the night were anything but pure. Ruth was a righteous woman. Verse number 12. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Here's the hitch. The hitch in the story. The one thing at this point in time that probably caused Ruth's heart to sink. There was another kinsman that was more closely related to the family of Elimelech than Boaz. Now again, at no time in this story does it tell us exactly what the relationship of Boaz was to Elimelech's family, and it doesn't tell us exactly how close the other kinsman was. But before Boaz could act as a kinsman redeemer, and remember, she could have asked just to be married. She could have asked about that. But in order for him to fulfill the role of a kinsman redeemer, the other man had to decline. He had to decline. Look in verse 13. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then I will do the part of a kinsman to thee as the Lord liveth. Lie down until the morning. Boaz now tells her to rest. Stay the night. But you need to leave in the morning. He tells Ruth that he will approach the other kinsman the next day. That he'll, at the very first opportunity, he will take care of all that he can take care of. Now, he understands that if the other kinsman says that he'll play the part of the Redeemer, then he'll have to play the part of the Redeemer. But if he says no, Boaz will joyfully do that. And we'll see in the next chapter how Boaz approaches that, because we can tell by in the next chapter that Boaz had a strong desire for the other man to say no. So we'll see that next time. But he swears to do these things. Now, verse number 14, and she lay at his feet until the morning, and she rose up before one could know another. And he said, let it not be known that a woman came unto the floor. Again, notice where she stayed. She stayed at his feet. Again, the scripture makes it clear there was no kind of unscrupulous behavior that took place here. Ruth left early in the morning before anyone could see that she was there. Why? Because, just like many who will say, Boaz did not want anyone to think that anything wrong, anything of ill repute had taken place here. Verse number 15. Also he said, bring the veil that thou hast upon thee and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 measures of barley and laid it on her. And she went into the city Now, the Hebrew word for veil here is obscure. It doesn't necessarily mean a facial veil, but it could have been any kind of piece of cloth, maybe even a light blanket or something that she could have brought along with her, an apron that she tied around her. It could have been anything. But Boaz here gives her a significant amount of grain, a significant amount. And why? He wants it to be taken back to Naomi. Now, verse number 16. And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, "Who art thou, my daughter?" And she told her all the man that the man had done to her. Now, how much sleep do you think Naomi got that night? None. I'm sure she didn't get in none at all. Now, Naomi wasn't blind. When Ruth entered the door, she knew who Ruth was. But she asked her the question, "Who art thou, my daughter?" Why is she asking this? She is really saying, "Are you the wife of Boaz or not?" And then Ruth, of course, goes on to tell her all that had happened that night. Naomi's plan had worked just as she thought it was, but obviously she did not know that the other kinsman was closer in nature. Verse number 17, "And she said, 'These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said to me, Go not empty unto thy mother-in-law.'" Undoubtedly, Boaz knows that Naomi has been very instrumental in all of these things. But his concern, I want you to understand, his concern is not just for Ruth. His concern is for Naomi as well. He's taking care of her as well. Verse number 18. "Then said she, 'Sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall, for the man will not be in rest until he have finished the thing this day.'" Naomi tells Ruth, "Calm down. Calm down, sit, stay in the house." She knew well that Boaz would go out and do everything that he said that he would do, and he would do it that day. You know, as we read this chapter, you know, we have to think of Christ as being our kinsman redeemer. We have to think of him as being our redeemer, and it's through him that we, that Gentile, just like the Moabite, gets grafted into the family, into that lineage of Christ, into the very seed of Christ. Now, a lot of free will denominations, when they preach this, what they'll preach is that Ruth had to come to the kinsman redeemer and ask. She had to ask. And you know what? She did. But I'm going to tell you this. There is never a sinner that comes to Christ that doesn't come to that point in their life after being convicted of their sins and convicted as the Holy Spirit does, that person doesn't cry out in their heart, "Lord, save me." Lord, to that extent. But I want you to take notice here. Ruth would have continued to live a widow the rest of her life with Naomi, except for the fact that Naomi commanded her to go to Boaz. And in this respect, I believe she is a good representation of the Holy Spirit. Because no one is made willing until the Spirit works his part in salvation. Just as it took Naomi to make Ruth willing to call upon her Redeemer as well. Now next week, we're going to look at the last chapter of this book. We're going to look at the story of two Redeemers. We'll call one the Barefoot Redeemer, and then Boaz the True Redeemer. Because in order to be the Redeemer, you got to be willing to pay the price. You got to be willing to pay the price. We'll see that next week.